Welcome to Market Proof Marketing, the podcast from the industry leaders at Do You Convert, where we talk about the current and future state of marketing and online sales for builders and developers across the globe. We're not here to sell you, we're here to help you and to try and elevate the conversation. Is there a topic you'd like us to cover or a question you'd like us to answer? We'll do it. Simply send an email to show@doyouconvert.com. Welcome to episode 330. I'm Kevin Oakley, and with me today is Julie Jarnigan and Jackie Lipinski.
Wow.
Hello.
All right. I don't know who to pick. Eeny, meeny, miny. Julie, you first.
Okay. So I'm coming here for your advice.
Oh, good.
So I got an email from Kindle Direct, what the book is published through, and says they have a new beta program where you can publish your book, audiobook, but it's a virtual voice. You get to choose the virtual voice, but it's a virtual voice. The system does it, takes care of it. You don't have to do anything. So I'm like on the fence. Do we think the virtual voice is super annoying and everybody would hate it? Or is it worth it just to throw it out there and have an audiobook of building certainty?
So I love this question. And I don't want to answer it first. I will if Jackie makes me, but.
Well, I always want to go back to, what do you think, Julie? But I think it's one of those things. So for me, I don't sometimes have time to read a book. So an audiobook for me, just without the AI, would be beneficial, but I would like to hear it in Julie Jarnigan's voice more so.
I don't know if you want that many hours of my voice. The Oklahoma would start coming out.
Yeah. I wonder if you can pay extra where, you know, if you listen to the first couple chapters, if you can say that's the voice I want to emulate me. But I feel like it'd be fun if we uploaded your voice enough where it can be like, we can copy that in audio.
Oh, that'll be next. Maybe that'll be next.
11 Labs will do that pretty well. I mean, as far as any other AI service, and you don't have to read. I think if you read up to 30 minutes, it'll do better, but you can start with like 5 to 10 minutes of voice training.
What is this? 11 Labs?
Yeah. 11 Labs. Yeah.
Okay.
Been there, done that. It's interesting. Here's the thing. At the end of the day, I agree with you, Jackie. I like audiobooks too. I like podcasts. I like anything that lets you multitask because you're busy. But by definition, that means whatever you're listening to is not that important to you. Mm-hmm. And so that's where I really struggle with this is there's a whole bunch of narrative of yes, do it all, because the more noise that you make, it's better for you. Is it better for, I don't know. Is it better, Julie, for someone to say, I listened to your audiobook kind of, sort of, 20% while I did other things and didn't take any notes, didn't let it really enter my consciousness, just mostly my subconsciousness, but I checked it off. I read it. It's done. Now what's the next thing? Or is it like,
or if it was worth their time, then would they want to go back and get a hard copy and like dive into it?
There are definitely books where the right question for Kevin is not, did you read that? But how many different ways did you read it? Mm-hmm. There's a handful of books where I have the audio version. I have a hard copy. I've got a paperback copy. I've got the Kindle edition because they're that core. Like I go back to them again and again and again, and no matter where I am, I want to be able to have access to it for different reasons or if I'm going to take notes. So, have any of you gone somewhere to hear an author speak or like someone that you've seen other places, see them speak in person?
Yes.
Why do we do this? This is kind of weird behavior, like pay money. In fact, you pay a premium to be closer to the person. Typically, if there's a arena, like what's that about? That's about like, you want to, so that's where like, I would never listen, Julie, personally. I would never listen to your book with someone else's voice because I know you. Mm-hmm. The whole point is to be known. The whole point is to be understood, not just digested like a bag of rice. I don't, it's not about how many people can like McDonald's versus like trying to make your content like McDonald's. Yeah. You're going to billions and billions serve. That's awesome. How much change do you really create in the world? I mean, you give people a lot of calories. I don't know. I'm not trying to go like meta on everyone.
No, I like just, the conversation. It's fun. It's fun to talk.
I don't like it.
You don't like now, it. Okay.
If it's here's, and this goes back to one of the stats that I've talked about for a couple of weeks now. If it was good enough that I had no clue that it wasn't you, then that works because, and this goes back to marketing and branding, generally speaking, goes all the way back to Dan Ariely's book, Predictably Irrational. How the coffee is made and the story of how the coffee is made truly makes the coffee taste better. It's not because there's things that I bring to the cup of coffee and there's things that the cup of coffee brings to me. And so that's where you'd say, well, then Kevin, now you really don't make any sense. If you would listen to AI of Julie, if you knew it wasn't Julie, or if you didn't know it wasn't really Julie, but then I'd be bringing a different part of myself to that audiobook. That's what makes this hard is, like, I was reading something from Tom Goodwin on LinkedIn is one of the best people. He has got lots of other content, and I may try to get him to be a keynote speaker at an event in the near future. But he just makes the point about, like, yes, the short term and medium term future of chatbots is they will have an amazing interface that will make it feel like there's a human able to respond to you. And if you ask, he uses the example, if you ask a hotel chatbot, does the hotel have a Tesla charging station on site? The average chatbot response will be very human-like and say, you know what? I'm not sure. I don't have that information. You should probably call the on-site person. And his point, which again, I think is right on, is the top 1% would give you the phone number to call. But it's about the underlying data and availability of information for that interface to connect with that's going to make a difference. And his point is, like, they can't be any better than the information they have. It's we're still looking for AI to solve problems that my recollection or my experience has been that most people can't even articulate what it is they're really trying to solve.
Mm-hmm.
I think that took us nowhere. Do we need to start story time over? I don't feel like we accomplished anything.
No, I think that was.
So perfect. What are you doing? Are you gonna try it?
I don't know. I haven't decided.
What's the implications? Can you undo it? Can you?
I think I can turn it off if I wanted to turn it off, because you can turn a book off and on. So yeah, maybe it's worth seeing what it sounds like.
I think you should do it for like 2 weeks or a month, and then turn it off and see if people complain that they want it back.
So do y'all ever listen to audiobooks, fiction? The narrator matters a lot in fiction.
Yes.
Because mm-hmm. it's like, how much do they change their voice? Is it too much? Is it not enough? Like, there's mm-hmm. reasons that's important. Nonfiction, I don't know if it matters as much. So that's what I'm curious about. I would say it
matters more.
It matters more? Yeah. Okay.
I do because there's not necessarily narrative to keep your attention. So if the person puts the wrong emphasis, wrong emotion on the wrong part. I don't know. Yeah.
It's kind of like your own audiobook of home builder experience too. Like, that's where I'm seeing your value and insight. And yeah, what Kevin's saying of, like, you know where to emphasize, you know what the important parts you want to make sure, like, hit home are versus the robot might
this
not.
This is the whole podcast now, because there's other implications, Julie. Like, you could use AI to make mm-hmm. it, the cost is essentially nothing.
And therefore, the time.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not, well, if you used AI to make it, it's not your time and the mm-hmm. cost would be low. And so mm-hmm. you could argue, well, then the great part is you could make it really inexpensive. The problem is if you're with anchoring, if your audiobook version costs $5 because it's really inexpensive and kind of mediocre production value and a computer-ish voice, mm-hmm. but then your real book is what, $20, $25? I don't know what it is.
15. What is it?
55? That's not okay.
15.
It's worth 55. No, it's worth 55. Then you got a problem of this mismatch in signal and, like, wait, I don't understand. Why don't I just get the cheap version? Oh, I'm not really even going to listen to the whole thing because it kind of puts me to sleep or doesn't hold my attention. Yeah, there's other implications. And then my final point is, and this is just me being stupid, I'm saying it in advance.
I'm ready.
If you don't value your content enough to spend 8 hours reading the audiobook version, it's kind of strange to say my audience should value it more than you value it yourself. One of the things I say to people all the time, whenever trying to help with marketing, every builder I've ever worked for, every person I've ever worked for, there's always this moment that comes where they're like, why didn't you make this thing better? And I have to say, because I can't care about it more than you do. Like, whatever it is that you're trying to have made and produced, the marketer's got lots of different pieces we can add in to package it up and make sure it looks good and sounds right. You can edit it. We can do all those things, but no one can care about it more than the person who's like responsible for saying, this is what I want to make. Mm-hmm. And if they're distracted or unwilling to focus on it, like it always becomes an issue. So I just think if you're going to put something in the world that you don't value enough, it's, and again, this, I'm probably just being dumb. You're not respecting your audience enough if you just hit the easy button either.
Okay.
I feel like a lot of marketers are like, dang it, that thing I was going to outsource now has to come back.
That's why I'm saying I'm dumb. And Julie, I think in that case, if it was fiction, I don't think for me, because I know you well enough, it'd be weird if I heard you read fiction and doing other voices, mm-hmm. even if you were really good at it.
Mm-hmm.
It would just be
I agree.
You know?
Yeah.
I wouldn't be able to.
That would be awkward.
Hear the character because I just keep hearing Julie.
Yeah.
As the character.
Interesting.
So yeah, we're totally doing it. You're
going
to do it for a month. We'll post a link in the show notes for the next 3 weeks of the audiobook done by computer.
Okay.
And we'll see what people say.
Julie, there was a book and it released, you know, the one person speaking, and then it released it was Good Omens. And then it released the book of multiple characters playing it. So there are two audiobooks. I own both of them. Because I love, like, I just wanted to see what different experience I, like, could digest, because that was important mm-hmm. to me too. So yeah, it'd be funny if you kept them both and be like,
I just think you should charge double for the audiobook.
Mm.
We're being fully transparent. All that money goes to Julie and her little kids.
Usually audiobooks are more expensive than
really.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, yeah,
if you
double.
Buy it, but you can make it available on Audible too. So it would just be a whatever
credit.
Your Audible credit is. Mm-hmm.
No, double. So this is going to be a money-making scheme for Julie's family. test for the next month. I say give it a shot. So the lesson there is, like, what's the scale of the test? Who's it going to negatively impact? Everyone's eyes wide open on what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
If they love it, good. If not, but mm-hmm. we're not trying to trick people. It's not going to say read by Julie Jarnigan.
No.
Ish. Yeah.
Ish.
Okay. I'll add it to my to-do list. Figure it out.
I can see Mike already sending you stuff, like a padded room to record this audiobook in.
Well, I don't think you'd ever get published if Mike was the audio engineer on that one.
He'd
do it again with.
He's our audio.
He's our audio. Yeah. Audiophile. That's the right word I'm looking for.
Yep.
All right, Jackie, what do you got?
I have a funny story. So my friend moved 30 minutes away from where he lives, and he had, sorry if you're listening to this, Zach, he had a going away party, and his girlfriend made him a book of memories. And so he's telling this story, and my husband and him are having a get together. He's telling the story to another friend. They're like, oh, what state did you move from? He's like, no, I moved 30 minutes away. And they're like, you moved 30 minutes away? And you had a going away party and your girlfriend made you a book and it was that big of a deal to you. So it was kind of just like a funny reminder, because in Illinois, 30 minutes is 30 minutes. It's no big deal. But in Washington, 30 minutes east, you're like sometimes as close as the, you know, mountains. And so, so some builders will be like, oh, this community is 30 minutes away. It competes with my other community. Does it? You know, maybe it doesn't. Maybe that's such a significant lifestyle change for people that it really, you're putting too much thought that it is competing, and it might actually be completely two different buyers. So just like a funny reminder to how far 30 minutes is for some people.
Yeah. Everything in Texas is just around the corner when we would visit my aunt and uncle in Austin. And then like 35 minutes later, I mean, I was 10 or so. I'm like, why is, I thought we were going around the corner. Oh, it's just 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what? We could go anywhere in Columbus in 30 minutes, anywhere. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
And well, yeah, we went long enough on story number one.
I know, I was like, I'll keep this one.
There's more there. Because it still is interesting how people, especially sales leaders, will say, no, these two are targeting the same market. But then you look in the CRM and they're very different kinds of people. And you're like, I mean, obviously you're local, you know that they should be, but they aren't. So there's learning to be done there too. Mine is, I guess, the story time / the more you know, NBC style thing. But what I'm starting to see a lot more of is a lot of stats being used to justify why a team wants to do some stats that people hear at different events. And this is a theme, again, if you've listened to the podcast for years, you've heard riffs on this too. But instead of, especially your senior leadership team is going to be fall prey to this, instead of hearing a stat and running back and saying, what are we going to do to do something similar, or how are we going to do the same thing? There should be more questions. So there's too many stats generally and not enough questions around the stat. You know, like the other day, I saw something from, I saw a post about how generative AI was going to be like a $2.5 trillion impact to an industry over the next 10 years. And you're like, I mean, I guess I'm not telling everyone to be skeptical like I am. Just ask questions like, how did you come up with that number? How do you know that? Like, we still can't correctly predict the weather more than like 5 days out. So I just want to encourage everyone, when you hear stats or see stats, you should never, ever be afraid. It happens every time when we publish our online sales stats, people will email and ask us questions. And you know what we do? We answer the questions. You should never feel bad or strange about reaching out for asking clarifying questions related to stats that are shared and stories or case studies, all of that, because we get way too excited right now over the stats, and we're not asking enough critical questions. And it's causing, again, back to the theme from the builder show. Oh, it was the same crew. It was the three of us talking post builder show. This like, hey, each department's got their own pet project that they're working on in their own silo and doesn't understand how it impacts everyone else. And a lot of those things start from seeing a stat and saying, oh my gosh, we gotta jump on that too, without asking enough questions.
Yeah. And I think that is a danger after something like the builder show, because people are on stage talking about these exciting things they did and giving out stats about how successful it was. And they can't possibly, it's not totally their fault, because they can't possibly give you the whole picture of something right then.
Yeah.
So you just assume, well, we should be able to replicate that in the same way, and we should get the same results. And you don't, that's only a little snapshot of what that project entailed. So I have some people are like, we want to take this on, but haven't stopped and thought of the scope of that, or what it really meant for that company, or how much trial and error they went through, or if it's a good bit. So it seems like that's keeping to right after builder show what we're hearing.
I hear that a lot too, Julie, in terms of people go, oh, that looks great. And then you're right, they have to sink in and go, what's the manpower it will take to get us there? Is that something we have to staff up? Do we have enough time? Like, do we have enough effort and time to staff up to create that, you know, customer service position to help increase the relationships between builders? Like, because I feel like everyone can always become a junk drawer, especially when like things are coming from all places of like, we have to achieve this. It's like, well, how do we achieve it? And let's talk about it as a crew. But yeah, how many photos did they have? 15,000 photos tagged in the photo gallery.
I think it was more than that.
Yeah, Keystone. Like, how long do you think that took them? That wasn't a 1 week project. So
yeah, that's one of my favorite things to do whenever I do put stats up, is to watch everyone lift up their phones to take the picture. And then, I mean, it could become a drinking game now, I guess, that you're all aware of it, but almost every time I'll say, let me tell you what they had to go through to get that, or let me explain to you a little bit more about why this builder was in a unique situation to pull this off. Because again, our job is to to inform and to point in a direction, but it's to try to make everyone understand the trade-offs that are involved. And every stat does have trade-offs. I mean, right now in my inbox, there's a conversation of someone who's trying something really cool. And it's not going well. And it's not going so well to the point that they're like, I'm going to pull the plug on this. This isn't a DYC thing. It's a different partner they're working with. I'm going to pull the plug on this if it doesn't get fixed in 24 hours. Now, my hunch is it's going to get fixed. And my hunch is you'll see this person on stage sometime in the future talking about how this is great. And I wouldn't expect them to detail the exact specifics of all the pain that has gone through the trial and error to get there. But if I'm anywhere near, I'm going to remind them, because it's like everyone needs to know how hard it is to some degree. All right. On to the news. First up, this episode is probably going live when the VIP launch for the Online Sales and Marketing Summit is also gone live earlier this Thursday. So, hey, Chicago is going to be great. We heard the feedback of we liked Gillies. We liked having an event venue, but we loved having in years past kind of a lot more serendipitous meetings that occur when everyone stays in the same hotel. Now, we're going to have plenty of space in the event venue. The number of rooms in that hotel are probably going to get sold out. We'll find other venues for people to stay at nearby. I mean, it's downtown Chicago. There'll be plenty of rooms. But that's going to be a fun change. We already have a whole bunch of speakers lined up. We don't typically finalize topics until, in this case, with it being early October, it probably won't get finalized until late June, July. And that's to try to give everyone time to figure out, unlike submitting for the Builder Show, like, what do we really need to talk about right now? So that's going to be awesome. And a big thank you to all of our partners. I think in future episodes, I'll just do quick little highlights of our partners, because we have 13 amazing companies that are listed at the bottom of that site that are partnering on the event with us. It's going to be awesome. So check that out. Link in the show notes. And I mean, I don't want to say this. Our first, is this the 9th or the 10th? I think this is the 9th.
I think it's the 9th
summit event, because we didn't count the pulse when COVID happened. Then I flew to Oklahoma with 4 masks on my face to do a live stream event. But the first 7 we would sell out typically in a couple days. This venue has a lot of space, but I'm just saying, I think our team is going to be telling Mike and I that we've got a challenge with space sooner than people are going to think. So check it out. All right. First real article up, also from doyouconvert.com. Let's get visible. I refuse to sing, but you know where it's from.
Thank you.
Jackie, take it away. Give us a quick overview of the article.
So I wrote this article. It was funny because sometimes, I remember talking to you, Kevin, you're like, I feel really inspired when I get angry. And so I had gone on a road trip and I was like, oh, I know this community is struggling. Let me go find it. Couldn't find it. I was like, okay, there's no signage. I know they're struggling. Let's go to it. Where's the model home? Is that the model home? So I feel like sometimes, and then I found out like the marketer hadn't visited in 6 months. The photos on the website were outdated. So I wrote this article to kind of help other marketers just understand sometimes we might be in the seat for a long time, but there's obvious things that are happening on the ground that might not be obvious to us because there's a human element missing to our data and our Excel sheets that we need to make sure is being processed and being reviewed and someone's checking on those things. So I created a quick checklist about like what to look on your website, what to check on site, like basically the bare minimum things that should be happening. Because I don't want to hear from another builder, oh, this community is struggling. Okay, you don't have a model home sign. Okay, your sign still has coming soon, even though you've been selling for 4 months. Like, I can't see that. I can't see that in your data. But someone needs to be checking all elements. So angry Jackie out. But
we like Angry Jack.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah.
It's a good, I would say, like, triage checklist of, you know, if you go to the ER, they're going to get your vitals. This is the correlate here is the on-site vitals, and digital vitals to make sure that everything is consistent. The number of times someone is talking about something struggling and you go in and it's pretty quick. It feels unfair from our standpoint, cause we're, blinders off, cause we're further away from it all. And we're like, what about that? I mean, and inevitably there, it's like how I feel every time I can't find something and my wife goes and she's like, it's right there, you idiot, in the drawer. It's that same feeling. So this is a good third party checklist.
Yeah.
Based
on a true story. And not just one marketer. So I'm not picking on any specific one, because the other one was like, we're struggling. And then it said coming soon and it was out for months. I feel like I've heard a few times. So just a reminder, but yeah, thanks for that.
Yeah. And often with us, they're just like, can we spend more? Can we turn up ad spend? And yes, we can spend more, but before we start spending more, are all the other things on the list done?
Yeah.
Because you may not need to spend more if you've taken care of all these things that are on the list, other than just let's raise our budgets.
And today I had a call with someone who had a particular inventory home over $1 million. And we had said, hey, let's spend more and see if we kick up dust. What are the outcomes? And there were no additional showings, no leads, no anything, despite the fact that there were 3,000 people. And again, this is not applicable to everyone, but if you convert, unless someone, you know, threatens to hurt our children, we kind of say, hey, here's best practice. We try not to veer too far from what we know based upon the nearly $40 million in ad spend that we manage, what will work. So that means that when we see traffic volumes, there's not this whole other problem of, is that good quality traffic or not? Generally speaking, we're going to look at the data and analytics to confirm that. But in this case, again, it was all good. And the owner was also on the call and the conversation was, so should we just be patient and wait for the right buyer, or should we change something? That's Jackie's facial expression is correct.
Just shaking my head like, no,
because there are no positive signs of movement. And to his credit, what the owner did say is, well, what's the difference between these two homes that are in the same situation and this other home that we have that hasn't sold, but you're not saying you're concerned about that one? And the sales manager said, well, we're getting traffic units and leads and even some offers on that one that they ultimately end up wanting something else. But I'm seeing those leading indicators that we can afford to be a little bit patient and it's probably going to work. Whenever something is not working, if you have a community that gets a zero, you have an inventory home that gets no leads on it for, you know, 3 to 4 weeks, you have to keep changing something.
Yeah.
The answer is never just to spend more, unless you've never spent anything. Then start spending something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Julie, if you don't want to talk about this story, we can cut it.
I don't know what the story is.
Well, it was why I got angry on LinkedIn also the other week, because I was like, email marketing, let's come back to you. And I'm realizing that's not in my article. So I'm going to have to throw that in there. Mm-hmm. It was how you talked to a builder. They were like, let's spend more. You spent more. Then you analyzed that we were only at the same amount of traffic as the previous month. And you're like, how did we spend so much more? And we're not there. And it turns out that they were not sending emails at all. Right. Yeah.
Well, they were in the comparison time period. They were sending emails and then they had.
Okay. Yeah.
It
had slowed down. So and it helps to look at the data to see like why did we have traffic coming up? Where was it coming from? So that's where it's useful to look in the data and be able to see like, wait a minute, there's something on the list missing.
Yeah.
We've got to add that in too. Or we're just spending money for, you know, when we could have done it for free.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yep. All right. Next up from builderonline.com, incentives remain name of the game for builders in 2024. As mortgage rates have come down from peak levels, incentives such as rate buy-downs remain important tools to help buyers solve the affordability equation. So what's interesting is, again, in context to this, One of your builders, Julie, doubled their sales goal for the month from 40 something to nearly 100. Yep. Talked to a builder yesterday in Pennsylvania. They had sales goals of like 10 and 11 in January and February, 23 net sales in each month, double, more than double those results. So even despite a lot of builders having really good sales success, incentives remain the name of the game. And I just think it's interesting that that I've got some super nerdy reasons why I think maybe this is happening, but let's just stick with the article and some of the stats that it talks about. So it says, there's a good quote from Allie Wolf about incentives address affordability, but are also a great marketing method. Mm-hmm. This is completely true. And the first stat here, I think, was 56% of new home communities, according to Zonda, offered incentives in January, flat from December. And most of this is still buy down related, it looks like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So one of the quotes I thought was interesting is that she said, buy downs are so common that we almost forget how expensive they are. Well, just from the builders I've talked to in the last couple of weeks, they are realizing now how much they're spending on that. The people who are pulling back, it's coming back to profitability. You know, a lot of people who are like, well, do you still have those incentives right now? And it's like, well, we didn't make as much on those homes that we were, you know, giving those incentives on. So the people who are pulling back, it seems like they're realizing how much that's cutting into their bottom line and trying to kind of rein that in.
Yeah. I'll also say the builders I know who did buy downs, what they're realizing in certain areas are they're like, wow, I thought people would take advantage of this more. And some people, again, still have cash, or that's not the incentive that's speaking to them. So the most success that I think I'm hearing from on the ground is just a choose your own adventure incentive option to close those deals, seems to be really working. Cause you're right, Julie, it is affordability is a big, important to buyers, but also to the builders and what they can be doing to help both of them, I think, close that home and make that sale. But anything else, Ed?
Yeah. Well, some of the other stats near the bottom of the article says that Cheryl Palmer said approximately 20% of Taylor Morrison's closings in 2023 used some forward commitment, with offers heavily leaning towards first-time buyers. TriPoint Homes CEO Doug Bauer said permanent rate buy-downs remain popular. Approximately 86% of the home builders' orders are using some type of financial incentive, with the majority offering a permanent rate buy-down versus a temporary buy-down.
Yeah, a lot.
I think I'll try to stay a little bit out of the weeds that might be confusing in pure audio format, but what we've done as an industry is we've really highly connected the financing of the product and the product itself. It seems to me that this is going to become a very painful unwind when and if that becomes necessary. Why would that become necessary? If rates do go down and this is not a tool that's no longer necessary, I mean, I don't, with all of the lawsuits and the NAR and with government, I hate to put this in the world, but I don't know what other way to talk about it other than home builders have kept their homes in a lot of cases priced artificially high. That's a strange word to use, but I think it's correct. Artificially high to pay for these incentives, because that's helped affordability better than any other way possible. But if you don't need them anymore, and you wouldn't need them because rates are going down, why would rates be going down? Because the economy is not as strong. And so we can't afford to keep rates higher. All that just means, I think at some point prices are going to have pressure on them. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure when that's going to happen, but you just think if you don't need that 8% to buy down the mortgage rate and you're trying to be competitive against used homes or competition, you're going to take out that 8% cost and you're going to be forced, the market's going to force you to say, I'm going to give most or all of that back to the consumer and just reduce my price by that amount. And when the big players start doing that, that's going to cause some cascading effects, I think. I hope I'm not right on that, but it seems like there's no way around it. Now, there are some people who are saying, like LGI Homes chairman and CEO Eric Lipar said he anticipates continuing to incentivize buyers with offerings to get rates as low as possible, but we don't think that needs to be more than we have been doing in 2023. So at the very least, I would agree with that, that I am seeing more rates in the fives than in the fours or the threes in a lot of markets being advertised. And that's, again, part of the cost increasing, but also I think as consumers get, this is my final thought on this topic, is it goes along with Hartford Homes video that I shared from Nicole.
That's what I was going to say.
Where she really highlights that our buy down isn't just to save you money and make it more affordable. It's to get you the stuff in the home that you really want. The type of flooring you want, the type of backsplash, appliances, et cetera. And I think the longer that rates stay around where they are, that's going to resonate more than just save money, because the consumer has gotten used to where rates are over time. And actually, if you think for the last 2 years, most of those buyers do not have rates that would be painful to lose, except for a new construction where they've had buy downs. So there's still a lot of, there's millions of people who are not going to feel stuck the way that, that some people who bought during the pandemic years will feel stuck.
And putting that towards things like design choices, it goes into that same messaging of why buy new. And we're going to need that as the price differences are there. So I agree that that messaging will have to change.
Yep. And in mortgage news from probuilder.com, February saw more sellers jump back into the housing market. February's housing market saw an increase in the supply of available homes, with Dallas leading metros where the most sellers are getting into the market. The kind of rough number here, the number of new listings of existing homes on Zillow rose by 20.8% in February compared with the same time last year. And listings are also up 20% from January. So the used home market, as I've been saying on a lot of my calls the last couple of weeks, the used home market is waking up. The sleeping giant is awakening. Your biggest competition is stretching. Like, they just got out of bed. They're stretching in the morning. And in some markets, I think this was a stat from Zonda as well. It has in the article here. Compared to last year, Dallas is up 50%, Minneapolis 40%, and Austin, Texas 37%. There are many states and metro areas where the number of used homes on the market is already back to where it was pre-pandemic. The national average is still way below that. We're like 400,000 homes short, I think, of where we would be pre-pandemic, but it's mostly the Northeast and the Midwest that have yet to feel the effect of the used home market.
It's coming. I mean, I think still, I don't think we feel the effects yet. I think people think that they're feeling a little bit of that, but I think it's going to be a wake-up call here through the rest of the year, and it's going to hurt a little bit.
Yeah.
I think there's going to be some pain that's coming down the pipe on this.
I completely agree with that, because one of the builders we mentioned earlier that's having such amazing success is in Texas, in one of the tougher markets, and they're kicking. But I also just, it is interesting to watch some people who, as conditions have improved compared to the fourth quarter, they're executing, their leadership teams are on it. There's a second group who they're executing and they're doing the best they can, but they're still, their market has other challenges. And then there's a third group where it's more like my kids at dinner time. They sit at the table and they're like, what are you serving me today? I'll let you know if it's good enough or not. And they're kind of like expecting that when someone says the market's good, that it's back to pandemic level craziness.
Mm-hmm.
And in my head, I'm hearing Paul Seville, the former CEO of NVR, who I worked with for a couple of years, he would always say the market's better than you think it is. And I would say, even for the people who are struggling right now, the market's better than you think it is, but it still requires a lot of effort.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the way it always was before 2020. All right. What do we love? What do we hate these days?
Well, I didn't realize I was going with a theme, but I guess I am.
Okay.
So my library card, anyway, I always use my son's library card to get audiobooks. and they put a hold on it and I had to call them. So I hadn't been able to listen to audiobooks for a little while. And so I've been getting free audiobooks again, and it's been amazing. I forgot how much I like it and how much I missed it. So I've listened to like 4 audiobooks just here recently.
Do you use Libby for that? Is that what you use?
I use Libby. Some libraries, it's like Hoopla or something like that, but it's Libby on
my son Mason. He was listening to an audiobook on Libby, and he paused and he's like, "Dad, I don't understand. Why do they say they only have like 2 available of this thing that I want to read? Why do I have to wait?" And so I had to explain to him licensing and that there's still digital copies that they're purchasing and they can only lend them out, you know. And he's just like, "That doesn't make any sense, Dad."
Yeah.
Well, that's good. So, Jackie, how about you?
Good. I created a blueprint, or just like I drew my garden. I put, this is what I want to plant this year, counted how much I'm going to do, planted the seeds. And then also this year I decided I'm not planting all of it. 1, I'm tired. 2, I got 2 kids.
I have an excuse.
But sometimes just understanding and realizing like, that's not worth my effort. I can buy that for like $1 versus try to grow it for 6 weeks. And if it's not like a fun heirloom plant that's rare and you can't get anywhere else, I'm not even attempting this year. So it's kind of just the year of like letting go, but also realizing if I want to keep up with my hobby, I do have to kind of just go, I'll buy those at the store. So
yeah. Post a picture. I want to see your garden.
Yeah. We got Kevin.
Oh man. I always struggle because I feel like I should just share like products because I don't, although I did watch Napoleon. I mean, it was kind of disappointing. There were some good cinematic scenes, you know, if you're a history war type person, that were good. But it tried to make the guy lovable in a way that I didn't understand. Like the movie ends with explaining the total, like the millions of people who died as a result of Napoleon being Napoleon, but the whole time it kind of positions him as this like guy who loves peace and he just wants to get along and he's misunderstood. And I don't know. It was like, why are we trying? I should have known better. That was my attempt, my client at being culturally relevant. I thought I'll watch a movie
streaming?
This year.
Is it streaming?
It is on Apple Plus now, Apple TV Plus. Okay. Yeah. Or Apple, I don't know, Apple TV. That's a branding mess too. Why is there plus in just Apple TV?
I don't know.
Also Everly Well, you all do any like at home health tests?
I've heard of that, but I haven't done it.
Hate going to the doctor. Like I hate going to the post office. It's not that either one of those places is necessarily bad. I just don't like having to do that. It's proof that I'm a millennial, I guess, but being able to just get a home health test, I started up with food sensitivity, trying to figure out why do I have to clear my throat so much after I eat, you know, what's going on. But you have to prick your finger. That thing hurts like the Dickens. You think you're just going to get a little pinch. It's like 10 times worse than the worst bee sting I've ever had. I sound like a baby. It's fine after it happens, but holy smokes, I did not expect it to truly stab you the way that it did. I thought it was going to be like a Star Trek, like little.
You're talking to someone who had gestational diabetes. I had to prick my fingers.
Okay,
like,
well, then you know all about
day.
It. Like, you got to rub your hand under hot water. You got to, like,
it doesn't feel good.
Rub it a bunch to get all the drops of blood out. But you get to do it all at home, send it in, you get your test results back. I just think that's awesome. And to be able to baseline yourself, if there's certain kind of tests that you want to take on a regular basis, nice. It's pretty cool.
It's like the hypochondriac strain.
Yeah, well, that is... Mm-hmm. I think Andrew has talked about this before. Anything that can be not gamified, but if you can measure the metrics of it and you're wired that way, then you're like, mm-hmm. Oh, okay. I mean, Mark Zuckerberg has been used a lot in the ads for the 8 sleep company, like the bed that cools itself, and how he's tracked his numbers and he's dialed in his sleep and how he feels great. I think some of that, again, is our bodies are more complex than we know. But it's fun to make yourself believe that by having an air-conditioned bed, you can achieve sleep nirvana.
Yeah, and we have any control over that, really.
Yeah, I'm not over-indexing. I just think it's way more convenient and honestly cheaper than having to, even with insurance, go to a doctor's office. I mean, they're going to charge you $60-$80 just to get in the door.
Yeah.
Plus the cost of the test that they're going to charge you for 6 months later. So you can't remember how insane it is. Because you don't even remember what you did by the time you get the bill.
And
anyway,
does
all
it
this
decipher,
stuff.
Does it decipher all the results for you so that you're not?
Yeah, the results are still reviewed by a doctor. It's in the app. And so it tells you, and then like, I know this is either, this isn't what any of you are listening for necessarily, but you're here, 23andMe. I know like you're not supposed to do that now because they sell your DNA and you're going to get cloned without your consent or whatever. But what I love is 23andMe is like a Tesla car in that you get over the air updates all the time. It'll just be like, hey, we upgraded our functionality. And so this test that wasn't available is now available. You can go check your results without having to give another sample. And Everlywell does the same thing at times with some of their tests. So there is no affiliate link. Just go check it out. Just know if it's a blood sample, it's going to hurt more than you think it's going to hurt.
Agreed.
All right. That'll do it for this week. We'll see you next time.
See you.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us on another episode of Market Proof Marketing. Can't wait for the next one, or looking to connect with other new home marketers? Become a member of our private community, DYC All Access, which is 100% free and always will be. Get exclusive content not shared anywhere else, access to private events, and the ability to join a marketing impact group with other marketers like you around the country. Visit our link in the show notes or members.doyouconvert.com to join. All opinions expressed by me, Andrew Peek, Jackie Lipinski, and our castmates are solely our own opinions. Now get to work and make sure your company is market-proof.